So I have one basic question about this week's parsha, and if we can figure that out, we'll be very happy. In the parsha, numerous times, numerous means more than two, Moshe is told to do various actions in order to bring Aharon into the picture that Aharon will become a Kohen. Perek Kav Ches Pasuk Aleph, V'atoh HaKrev Elechas Aharon Achicha, V'zbano Vito, Mitoch B'nei Yisrael, L'chahano Li, Aharon Nodiv Avi, Olaz Avi Itamar B'nei Aharon. Bring close Aharon, your brother, and his children with him, from the midst of the Jewish people, the children of Israel, L'chahano Li, to serve me as a Kohen. So, here's my question. Why does Aharon deserve to be a Kohen? And don't tell me the old joke, because his father was a Kohen, and his grandfather's a Kohen, because it's not true. So you can't say that. Why should Aharon become Kohen? And I see two basic possibilities that we have to contend with. One possibility is that this whole episode takes place prior to the Chet HaEgel, prior to the sin of the golden calf. If it's prior to the sin of the golden calf, again, I would like to know what is it exactly that Aharon did to deserve it. And by the way, there's a flip side to that question as well. Prior to Aharon and his family being chosen as Kohanim, the role of the Kohanim belonged to the firstborn. So the flip side of my question then would be, what exactly did the firstborn do to forfeit their rights? Which means if you want to say that Aharon gets it, great. Why did they forfeit? Why does Aharon get it? So now you have a double-edged problem.
Prior to the golden calf.
Prior to the golden calf. See how that goes? If, on the other hand, it happens after the golden calf, then perhaps you, from the way that you phrased your comment, perhaps you would have an understanding why the firstborn have lost their role by the episode of the golden calf, but then now you have a better question. So what exactly did Aharon do to deserve to become Kohen? Quite the opposite. If the firstborn lose their right, then Aharon of all people certainly should have lost his right. So what I'm saying is, there are two basic approaches to the chronology. One is things are in their proper order, their proper sequence, and the sin of the golden calf doesn't take place till next week. The other approach is that the sin of the golden calf has already taken place, and prior to the whole instructions of building the tabernacle. Either way, I would like to know why exactly Aharon is chosen. Okay, that's my question. And we have this vague understanding that prior to Aharon's selection, that the role of Kohanim should have belonged to the firstborn. When exactly do we find for the first time that the family of Levi generally, and the family of Aharon specifically, will be chosen for a divine service? That's the whole question. That's what I want to deal with. So when searching for this, okay, I'm just kidding. I didn't really search. A couple of years ago, I came across an interesting comment, which is found in the Targum Yonasan. Targum Yonasan is a fascinating running translation commentary, full of all kinds of interesting traditions. And if anybody really is inept at reading Aramaic, and if one never looks in the Targum Yonasan, there is, by a fellow named Wertheimer, there is a translation of the Targum Yonasan to Hebrew today, that you can, if you can read Hebrew, then you can read the Targum Yonasan, and then you can read the Aramaic, and maybe you can even learn Aramaic. So there's no excuse. Unless you don't know Hebrew, then you have lots of excuses. If you go all the way back to a verse that I believe I mentioned last week, the verse had to do with Yaakov's dream, Yaakov's vision, Yaakov's epiphany. He sees the ladder, and then he wakes up and he says that he's going to build a house for God, and that we discussed last week. But then he says another thing as well. He says that if God takes care of him, you know, this is the way a Jew talks to God. If you take care of me, if you give me food, if you give me clothing, if I come back in peace, if I get back to my father's house, then everything that I have, I'll give you a tenth. So when does Yaakov give a tenth of everything? So now, where does the comment of the Targum Yonasan come in? When Yaakov comes back to Israel, He comes back. He's got money. He's got food. He's got clothing. He's got all kinds of things, actually. And he comes back. And as soon as he crosses into Israel, he gets accosted. He gets accosted, we'd like to believe, by an angel, by some kind of... Why does this person attack him? So again, if you really want to be paranoid, you can say, because he's Jewish. A Jew doesn't need a reason for someone to attack them when they're walking on the street, right? Certainly growing up in Brooklyn, that was the way that it went. No one had to say, why did he attack me? Meanwhile, because you have a yarmulke on, it may as well be like a, what do you call it, a bullseye. Yeah. Okay, but we don't have to be that cynical. Why is Yaakov attacked? So the Targum Yonasan says, this is why he's attacked. This mysterious assailant turns to Yaakov and he says, where's your side of the bargain? You remember you said that if you're going to give it, you're going to give a tenth of all that's yours. And by the way, the way that Yaakov actually phrased it when he said he was going to give a tenth, he said, V'chol asher titen li, everything that God gives me, this is in Perek Kav Ches, Pasuk Kav Beis and Bereishis, everything that God gives me, aser asrenu lach, I will give you a tenth. What does everything include? So the Targum Yonasan says, when he says, I'll give you everything, so then this mysterious assailant says, V'omar halo amarti la asara kol dilech, didn't you say that you're going to give a tenth of everything of yours? V'ha islach treser benin bar techada, you got 12 sons and a daughter. Actually, you had 11 sons and a daughter. You had 12 sons and a daughter. What happened to giving a tenth? Hold it a second. Did he ever say he's going to give from his kids? What did he say? Of everything. So this guy says, come on, it's time to pay up. So what the Targum then says is, how does he do it? He says the firstborn from each of his wives is already kadosh, because the firstborn is kadosh. So you take away the firstborn. That means you start by number two, you start by Shimon, and you count from Shimon. So he says if you count from Shimon, you'll end up finding that you get through nine, get through eight, come back to the top again, get to Shimon number nine, and Levi becomes number 10. Targum says, Efrish arba buchrin, take away the four firstborn, la arba imote, from the four, vishtari timne, vitonulami, the mamne mi Shimon, and he starts to count from Shimon, vasolik Levi bima'asra, and he becomes the 10th. So the Targum is saying, therefore, va'amar rebune de alma dain, who Abdcha. Here is your servant. Don't ask anything. As far as the Targum is concerned, here is where we find Levi being separated for divine service. Okay, this is clearly the earliest place that you can expect to find.
Isn't the first one Kodesh because it's a little circular? Because the first one is Kodesh because he's a Bachor, meaning. Exactly the same reason you're saying.
He's saying a priori, the first one is already kadosh, but you said you were going to give 10. That you meaning you when you say you're going to give tzedakah, right? You can't give tzedakah. You already chayav to give. For example, Purim is coming up, so can you give to matanas lavyonim? Can you give your meiser? No. Why? You already have to give matanas lavyonim. So the same thing with you. The bechor is already a bechor. You said you're going to give a tenth. You got to give a tenth. You can't count before because they're not yours to count. He doesn't have a coin to do pidyon. anyway, as I said, this is interesting because you've never heard anybody quote this before. That's why it's interesting. Now, I remember when I read this, I said, "How am I going to squeeze this into a class?" I mean, that was my fault because I'm not going to talk about it in the middle of Bereishis. There's too many other things there. You get to Tetzava. There's really to talk about. Anyway, where's the next time that you find some kind of reference to Levi? So the truth is the Ar Midrashim that I'm sure you're familiar with as far as the servitude in Egypt, that there are rumors and innuendos that Levi did not serve because Levi was Kadosh. The Egyptians, if you read in Miketz and Vayigash, you see the Egyptians respected their Kohanim, so therefore it's not so far-fetched that the Jews were also able to set up Kohanim who had special laws for them as well. And meaning, the discussion in Vayigash about the Egyptian priests seems to be the source, or one of the sources, the motivations for the Midrashim about Levi as well, because then it fits into the context. The next place that we see it is by Miriam and Yocheved. where it says there that God made for them houses. Aser lehem batim. Why? Because they would not listen to the decree of Pharaoh and kill the children. So it says that God made for them batim. What exactly does it mean for vayas lehem batim? This is in Perek Aleph, Pasuk Kaf Aleph in Shmos. So Rashi says, batei kohuna v'leviya umalchus shekorim batim. So it says, kohuna v'leviya miyocheved umalchus memiriam. That this mother and sister pair ended up getting from them Kohen Levi and the Melech because of their behavior. So again, that is also a clear reference. The next one, which is getting a bit closer, takes us into Perek Dalet and Shmos. Here, God has spent the last chapter and a half trying to convince Moshe to go down to Egypt and take the Jews out of Egypt. And Moshe, who's very, very modest, and sometimes even modesty perhaps should have limitations, Moshe hesitates. And by the way, it's not so bad to hesitate. You know, when somebody asks you to daven for the Amud, so the first time you say no, in my shul, they don't know the halacha. So I say no the first time. I haven't davened in 15 years. I say no the first time. I say, okay, go on to the next guy. So the first time you're supposed to say no, and the second time you're supposed to move a little bit. And the third time you get up and daven. I've never gotten to the second time. I'm not even going to talk about the third time. I'm telling you, if they asked me three times, I would daven. Don't tell them. But I would. I'd get up and daven. I have no problem. But we never get that far. So it's not so bad to say no the first time, maybe hesitate the second. But that's true to daven for the Amud. And it could be, if I would daven for the Amud, it would put some people in pain. Maybe it would put some people in pain. But over here, Am Yisrael are already in pain. They're in servitude. If somebody says to you, these people are dying, these people are slaves, these people are suffering, go and get them out. What are you supposed to say? I'm not sure, I don't know, it can't be me. Again, I don't mean to make fun of Moshe, but this is part of the problem over here. It's not just everything, it's not that God says, you know, had God said to Moshe, the building committee of the shul decided we want to honor you this year, and you're going to be the guest of honor by the dinner. Okay, so then Moshe says, I don't know, I don't feel so comfortable, you must have better people, all that I understand. But that's not what's going on. What's going on is that Am Yisrael are enslaved. If they're enslaved, you got to get them out. Nonetheless, Moshe at one point says, but I can't speak well. How can I be the spokesperson for these people? I can't speak well. And God says, you know, who is it who puts words in the mouth of men? Don't worry. God says, I got your back. Okay? When God says, I got your back, you go, right? You don't have to turn around and make sure you go. What does Moshe finally say? This is in Shmos Perek Dalet, Pasuk Yud Gimel. Vayomer bi Hashem, shalach na biyad tishalach. Send whoever you're going to send. The next Pasuk says, Vayichar af Hashem v'Moshe. God got very upset with Moshe. Vayomer halon Arun achicha halevi yadati ki daberi daberhu v'gam hinehu yotzei l'korsecha v'racha v'samach bilibo. God got very mad at Moshe and said, isn't your Aaron, your brother, the Levi, I know that he knows how to speak, and aside from that, he's coming out to greet you, and look, there is joy in his heart. Now this verse has an incredible amount of information in it, and we need to understand it. First of all, Rashi tells us, quoting the Gemara, Rashi says, pay attention. It says, God got very upset, and then God said, and Aaron, your brother, the Levi, is coming. This is Perek Dalet, Pasuk Yud Gimel. Pasuk Yud Dalet. If it says that God is angry, every other time in the Chumash when it says that God is angry, something happens afterwards. God is angry, and what comes next? Some kind of a response, a kind of a punishment or something. Over here it says God is angry at Moshe, and then he says, Aaron, the Levi, your brother is on the way. So Rashi says, also a very strange formulation. Aaron, your brother, the Levi. So it says that he was supposed to be Aaron the Levi. He was not supposed to be a Kohen. You don't want to go. You don't want to be my Shaliach. You don't want to go and be my emissary. God says, fine. You won't be my emissary for everything I wanted you to do. Which means, if you read between the lines over here, what you'll understand is God says, I want you to be my emissary, which means on the one hand, I want you to go down and take them out. But God is also saying, I wanted you to be my complete emissary in every area. I wanted you to take the Jews out of, I want to take the Jews out of Egypt, and I want you to be a Kohen. Now, you refuse to be my, you don't want to be my shliach, you're still taking them out. You're still going to go. But he forfeits the kahuna. He forfeits at this moment to be a Kohen. And that's why it says, your brother, the Levi, Aaron, now he's a Levi. By the time he gets there, soon something's going to change and he's not going to remain the Levi. And that's the punishment, because it says that God got upset. So God got upset. Where's the punishment? That's the punishment. At this moment, Moses loses the right to be Kohen. And instead, Moses is going to become the Levi, and it gets flipped. What? By the way, that doesn't help us with anything I've asked so far today. Why not? What was my question? What was my question? Do you remember? It's not so long ago. My question was, what does Aaron do to deserve to be a Kohen? What did I just now tell you? I told you about, so now you're going to be clever. You're going to say, okay, God said he's going to give it to the son of Yocheved. Right? Yocheved is going to get the right to Kohen and Levi. Right? We put the two Rashis together. He's going to get Kohen and Levi. So he's going to get Kohen and Levi. Moshe is supposed to be the Kohen and Aaron is supposed to be the Levi. Now that Moshe forfeited it, so why does Aaron get it? By default. You like that? It's very good. It's very good, wasn't it? What? It was very good, but it's not satisfying. You wouldn't want the answer to end up being, why did Aaron get it? Because there's no one else. Yeah? Very good. There's a couple things here. First of all, when God says that Aaron is on the way to greet you, I would like you to read between the lines. Why exactly is Aaron on the way to greet Moshe? How does Aaron know where to go in order to see Moshe? How does Aaron know this? What's the answer? Aaron is a Navi. He's a prophet. Not only is he a prophet, he's a prophet before Moshe's a prophet. Which means Aaron is a prophet. Aaron is, you know, the older son. And Aaron is going to greet Moshe. Why? Because God told him, go and greet Moshe. And God told him, because Moshe is going to take the Jews out. And God told him, and Moshe is going to need you to back him up. You'll be his right-hand man. And how does Aaron take this? Damn, I wanted to be the number one. How does he take it to the fact that he's a Navi first, now Moshe is becoming a Navi? The Samach Belibo. He's really happy about it. So there are those who point out that it's Aaron's joy, the pleasure that he takes in somebody else's success, that's why he's worthy to be a Kohen. Which means, ultimately, a Kohen is, the job of a Kohen is somebody who's going to connect somebody with God. How can you connect somebody with God? Only if you're the kind of person who really cares about other people. You don't care about other people. You're just looking over your shoulder all the time. He's got a bigger car. He's got a bigger house. He's making more money than me. He got a better bonus than me this year. If you're just looking over your shoulder the whole time, then that's not what a Kohen is. But if Aaron over here is really happy, this samach libo, that's what, again, if you read the whole pasuk now, God is mad at Moshe. Moshe loses to be Kohen. Aaron the Levi, right? Your brother, the Levi, your brother, is coming out to see you. He's on the way. And what else did it say? He's on the way to see you, and v'samach b'libo, and he's really happy. The fact that God added in v'samach b'libo, that helps us a lot, that he's happy in his heart, that helps us a lot to understand why it would be that Aaron deserved it. There are other commentaries that go a little bit further and tell us some general information about Aaron. I mean, Aaron is somebody who really does care about other people. Again, this would be, I would say, the primary source inside. The other source is after Aaron dies. When Aaron dies, it says that everybody mourned him for 30 days. So Chazal tell us, why does it say here everybody mourned him? Because it says that Aaron spent a career of trying to bring people together. He spent a year of trying to bring shalom into the world. He spent his life trying to bring peace between man and his wife, peace between man and his neighbor. Aaron was involved in shalom. And by the way, if you think about it, what exactly is the role of the Kohen? To bring shalom. But if you think about, let's say, the Berachas Kohanim, the blessing that the Kohen gives, it's a blessing of peace. V'semecha shalom. And then we go into the Berachas Sim Shalom Tovav Bracha, even when we put in the Shemoneh Esrei. The idea of the Kohen is to be a conduit for peace. Somebody who spent his whole life trying to create peace, he is a Kohen. Meaning, that's what a Kohen is. Aaron is a Kohen. I mean, I can even say that Moshe is a man of emes. Moshe is a man of truth. Aaron is a man of shalom. Now, I'm not saying that Moshe is not a man of shalom. I'm not going to say that Aaron's not a man of peace. Of truth, sorry, but there's a difference. There's a difference. There's a difference of focus. There's a difference of emphasis. It's very hard, by the way, for peace and truth to go together. Because generally, to create peace, what we have to do is we've got to bend the truth a little bit. To create peace, you have to make compromise. Right? If you want to make peace, you've got to back down a little bit. She's got to back down a little bit. And then maybe you can live in one house. That's how you achieve peace. I mean, so much so that I once heard from my Rebbe that the pasuk that says that peace and truth will march together. He said that's only when Mashiach comes. Well, only when Mashiach comes will he really be able to teach us how we can possibly bring the two together, peace and truth. Because the way that we look at the world right now, it doesn't go together. If you get peace, it's not truth. If you get truth, it's not going to be peace. But Aaron was a man of peace. Moshe was a man of truth. And if you'll ask me in terms of their personalities, who should be the Kohen is the one who creates shlemus. Shalom means shalom from the word shalem. Shalom means whole. It creates something which is whole. Peace is when there's something which is broken. Shalom is shlemus, when something is whole. And what the Kohen does is makes a person whole with God again. If you're a man of truth, it's a little more difficult. If you're a man of truth, somebody sinned, they sinned. I mean, it's a little more difficult. How does truth ignore that? So I'm just saying in terms of emphasis, because the reality is when Mashiach comes, we'll see that there's no contradiction. We have a hard time for it right now, but there is no contradiction between these two ideas. It's just very difficult for us to take it in from where we're sitting right now. Especially where we're sitting right now. So that would be a whole nother approach to understand what it is about Aaron. Although I'm missing something. What am I still missing? Because there's a flip side to the problem. And what's that? What did the Bechoros do? What did the firstborn do to forfeit their side of it? It's very nice to say that Aaron was good and he was nice and he got people together. All this is great. But what about the firstborn? Where did something go wrong? So if you pay attention, which for some reason we tend not to do more often than not, And by the way, everything I've said so far is Rashi. I mean, I haven't even worked hard today. Rashi brings down in Paritala Pasuk Yudalid that Aaron will become the Kohen. And then when it says, V'rosamach bilibo, Rashi brings down, Lokshita savor shiye makpid aletheshta oledugdula. Don't think that Aaron's going to care when you become great, quite the opposite. Umisham zoch Aaron la'adeh ha'choshen hanatun alev. That's because his heart was so good. That's why he got the choshen that the Kohen Gadol takes that goes on the heart. I mean, I'm saying Rashi says it very clearly right now. So there's another Rashi a little bit later on that we need to pay attention to. In Perikov Dalid, in preparation for Moshe to go up to the mountain, we read the following: Perikov Dalid Pasukei, Vayishlach es Na'arei Bnei Yisrael. What does that mean? Vayishlach es Na'arei Bnei Yisrael. They sent the Na'arei Bnei Yisrael. Who are the Na'arei Bnei Yisrael? Na'arei means the boys, the kids, the Na'arei Bnei Yisrael. Rashi says, Habacharos, the firstborn. So what exactly do the firstborn do over here? Vayalu alos, they bring offerings. Vizbechu zvachim, and they slaughterings. Right? Vizbechu zvachim shlamim la'ashem parim. Here we have our one case that we see clearly in the Chumash that the firstborn are functioning as Kohanim. Sounds good. They bring offerings. The difference between an Ola and a Zevach or a Shlamim. What's the difference between an Ola and a Shlamim?
Ola gets totally
consumed. An Ola gets totally consumed. And what do you do with the Zevach Shlamim?
You
have a big feast. You have like a big feast or you have a big... You have a bri, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Look at the smile he gets on his face. It's a Pavlovian response. I just ruined his night even by saving the word bri. He's not going to be able to sleep tonight now until he has... Wait for the temple. See, that's how they got into Davin. The temple. He heard that the Korban Pesach is going to be eaten like a shawarma, and that's it. You know, now he's davening for Mashiach. Beforehand, who cares? Get some korbanos down. Okay. So Rashi tells us that this is the firstborn. What happens afterwards? It says, I'm skipping to Pasuk Tes. Vayal Moshe v'aro nadav aviyu v'shivim v'ziknei Yisrael. Moshe, Aaron, Nadav, Avihu, and 70 elders. By the way, why Aaron, Nadav, and Avihu? What do they have to do with anything? They have no special role at this point. But Yeru es Elokei Yisrael, they see the Lord, the God of Israel, the Tafas Raglav Kamaseh Levnasa Sepir Ke'etzem Shemaim Latohar. I won't bother translating that. That's part of what they see, part of the vision. And then we have a very strange verse immediately afterwards, Pasuk Yud Aleph. The El Atzilei Bnei Yisrael Lo Shalach Yado, and to the, what does Atzilei mean?
Nobility.
The nobility, to the noble ones, to the noble ones of the Jewish people, the children of Israel, Lo Shalach Yado, he did not strike them. V'yichazu es Elokim, for they looked at God, v'yichlu v'yishtu, and they ate and they drank. Something went wrong over here. And there are midrashim, and Rashi mentions this as well, that God doesn't want to ruin the party. God does not want to ruin his celebration and start blowing people away at this point, even though that's what they deserve. I know that's wrong. It says Lo Shalach Yado. God didn't hit them. So what does it say when God didn't hit them? What can you now understand? That they deserve to be hit, right? That's what you can understand. They deserve to be hit. So our first problem is, what did they do wrong? Our second problem, who are we talking about? And there are numerous commentaries to this. The normative commentary is that this is Nadav Avihu and perhaps the Zakenim. Later on, Nadav Avihu will get theirs, and later on, the Zakenim will get theirs. I mean, I did see another commentary who made the suggestion that what we're talking about over here is not Nadav and Avihu. Rather, what we're talking about over here are the Bechoros, the firstborn. The one who really goes into this in depth is the Shemi Shmuel in Parshas Bamidbar. He says it. But if you pay attention, there's a little difficulty. It says that they went up, but then it says, by your Uwas Elokei, it's not clear who it's talking about. And then, it's not clear who we're talking about here either, although I do want to remind you of one thing. Who is the one who's responsible for there being food at this point? And the answer is the Bechoros. Why? Because they're the ones who... Meaning, they're the ones who are so excited because they're the ones who are finally performing. They're the ones who are finally becoming Kohanim. And I want to make a suggestion, which I'm not completely convinced of, but I like anyway. And that is, I still have to explain the shift in language. Why would it be in Pasuk Hey, it calls them Na'arei B'nei Yisrael, and why would it call them Pasuk Yud Aleph Atzilei B'nei Yisrael, if we're talking about the same people? Unless, of course, that by virtue of becoming Kohanim, they got carried away. Who were they when they started? They were Narei B'nai Israel. Narei means... What's a Nar? Even when it says that by Yosef, Naris B'nai Bila B'nai Zilpa, is like almost like an immaturity. They were Narei B'nai Israel. But then what happens? They see themselves as being nobility now, and they get taken away. And what they did was completely out completely unacceptable that during this religious experience, during this prophetic experience, what are they doing? They're looking at God and they're eating and they're drinking. And don't make any mistake about this. Later on, when we get to the Chet HaEgel, get to the Sin of Golden Calf, if you pay attention to the verses here and you pay attention to the description there, you'll notice that there's an echo between the two sections, including Ve'yachlu, Ve'yishtu, Ve'kamu L'tzachek. I'm not going to say they didn't eat for 40 days, but the next time you see people, Ve'yachlu, Ve'yishtu is right there by the Chet HaEgel, right there by the Golden Calf. Which would suggest to me that some way, shape, or form, there is a line which connects the sin of the golden calf back to what goes on wrong over here. And whatever it is, looking at, even think about this, looking at God, or some thinking that you can see God, thinking that you're looking at God, how does that lead us to a golden calf? You don't have such a big jump over there. Which means something which went wrong right at this point, where our firstborn are acting as Kohanim, that should already be instructed, which means if I set out at the very beginning the objective of trying to figure out why Aaron should become a Kohen and why the firstborn should lose this right to be a Kohen, I think at this point we've already provided both of those sides of information. The firstborn lose out because of their performance the one time that they do perform as Kohenim, standing by Har Sinai, that something here goes terribly wrong. And this idea of the eating and the drinking, again, you can have one person who eats a korban and feels really connected to God. You have somebody else who eats a korban, you know, as they're eating and they're doing a tikkun for eating from the tree of, right, it's a das Torah, and they're doing a tikkun for everything that ever went wrong in the world, and somebody else is eating a shawarma, right? So that's the problem. That's the problem of the korban. And over here, where it says that looking at God, and it sort of sounds like a little bit nonchalant. And again, make no mistake about it, I would also definitely say that whatever took place here also has an impact on what happens afterwards by Nadav Avihu, where there are these rumors about them perhaps being drunk or getting drunk, because immediately after their death, God warns Aaron not about not drinking before you go in to do avoda. There is something nonchalant about their dealing with God as well. I mean, if you're about to go and do avoda, you're not going to have a couple shots beforehand. You know, you go in and you want, you know, complete control of your facilities, faculties. You want complete control. You want complete understanding. You don't want to lose it. You don't want to walk in there and just sort of. But if you really feel too comfortable, then you can do all kinds of things. And why would you feel too comfortable? Because you're lacking a real sense of awe. You're lacking a real sense of Yiras Romimus, of all of what you're standing in front of. And as I said, again, especially if you go through the whole passage of the Shemi Shmuel, where he tries to build this up and to make that connection, he's clearly bothered by the same question which I raised, and what did the firstborn do? If that's the case, later on, when the Medrash tells us the firstborn were the ones who were most active involved in the sin of the golden calf, you realize now that the antecedent for that goes back to this episode over here. Now, all that helps us if we take one approach. And what's that approach? That this whole happens before the golden calf. Happens before the golden calf. Why does Aaron become Kohen? And we could put all these things together. Because Levi is already supposed to be holy all the way back from Bereshis. Right? Yocheb and Miriam, they get their blessing, they get their houses. Moshe was supposed to be, he loses to Aaron. Why does Aaron get it? Aaron gets it because of the way that he feels. Aaron, because of his joy. Because of the joy, the simcha involved in Aaron's heart. You know, as I said, all that is great till we get to the golden calf. And by the way, let's be honest. Let's even say every single part of this was true. And then Aaron sort of makes one kind of little mistake. And that mistake is he leads the way in this building of a golden calf, doing idolatry. I mean, that's a big time mistake. That's like one of these like small things that you can hide on your resume, you know, between... I mean, that is sufficiently strong that even if everything I said till now is right, it's still not good enough. Why in the world should Aaron remain Kohen? Why should he remain Kohen? Certainly, if I go the other way around, and if I follow Rashi, and I say that the golden calf took place before this, how in the world can Aaron become a Kohen after everything else? So first of all, let me say something which I'm particularly fond of. It's in the writings of Rav Tzadok HaKohen from Lublin, It's in a book called Takanos HaShavin, chapter 5, page 20. He says, don't think for a second. He says, don't think that Aaron becomes Kohen Gadol despite the golden calf. He says, that's not the case. He says, Aaron becomes Kohen Gadol because of the golden calf. But you have to understand the golden calf. Now, I'm not going to now go and take an approach and say, well, it wasn't really a sin, it wasn't really a mistake, it wasn't really Avodah Zarah, it wasn't really Aaron, it wasn't really the Jews. I mean, you could find people saying all kinds of things like this. No, it was Aaron. Aaron did it. It was Avodah Zarah. It was wrong. But here's the cheshbon. And I'm going to embellish it a little bit from what Rav Tzadik actually says. You know, when Moshe goes up the mountain, he says to the people, right here, when he goes up, he tells the people, if you have any problems, go to Hur and go to Aram. According to the Medrash, they go to Gemara, Moshe and Hedrin, they go to Hur, and they say, Hur, make for us an eagle. And Hur says, of my dead body. They say, fine. Okay, Hur dead. They come over to Aram, and they say, Aram, make for us an eagle. And Aram looks, and he sees that Hur is dead. Now, Aram is not afraid to die. It's not that he's afraid of them. Aaron says, if these people are guilty of killing Hur and of killing me in one day, who knows if they'll ever be forgiven for this. Hur, by the way, in case you missed it, and you didn't understand what you were reading a couple of weeks ago, when Moshe goes up to, when the fight against the Amalek takes place, Yeshua is down fighting the Amalek, Hur is holding one of Moshe's hands and Aaron's holding the other. That means that Hur is Moshe's right-hand man. Hur is from the tribe of Yehuda. Hur is the prototype of Mashiach ben David. David HaMelech comes from Hur. I mean, this is the prototype of Malchus based David. It means they killed Mashiach. Do you understand what I'm saying? This is our religion, by the way. They killed the person who's supposed to be Mashiach. That's what they killed. That's the Hur is supposed to be Melech. They killed the Melech. Right there, they killed the Melech. He says, no. This is, meaning, it's great. You respect your leaders, you love your leaders, you listen to your leaders till they tell you something you don't want to hear. Dead. Kill them. Now, Aaron is looking at this and saying, okay, they just killed Hur. If they kill me now, who knows they'll ever be forgiven? Who knows they'll ever be forgiven if they kill me in this place? So he says, better than them killing me, and then anyway doing the Avodah Zarah, Aaron says, I'll do the Avodah Zarah. I'll do the idolatry. I'll do the sin. And at the moment that he did it, this is what Tzaddik says, at the moment that he did it, he was very aware of the ramifications of this. Namely, that he will lose his share in the world to come, and God will take his soul and throw it into the furnaces of hell, and his soul will be destroyed. But Aaron is willing for his soul to be destroyed rather than the Jewish people sin. But by the way, you know what? People throw around the term Mesiris Nefesh all the time. What's Mesiris? I miss dinner. Oh, Mesiris Nefesh. What's Mesiris Nefesh mean? So if Tzaddik says Mesiris Nefesh, is you willing to give up your Nefesh? You're willing to give up your Neshama? Love God with all of your soul. What does it mean to love God with all of your soul, even if you put it in a situation that you lose your soul? The Tzaddik throws other people, by the way, into this discussion, including Esther as well, which is this, goes to the same approach. Yael, Esther, Shimshon, he goes into all kinds of people. He says, they were put in a situation, Jewish people, or their soul, they said, listen, got to lose my soul now, but that's worthwhile. Rav Tzaddik says, who's worthy to be a leader of a Jewish people? You look at Israel today, so a guy who becomes a member of the Knesset, why does he become a member of the Knesset? Because you get a good salary, you get a good car, you get a driver, you get all kinds of things. You know, people who want leadership positions today don't say, okay, what can I do to serve? What they're saying is, what do I get for it? What are the perks involved in it? Perks, that's the word. I know how you say perks in biblical Hebrew. People do things for the perks. People do things because what they're going to get for it. Who is worthy to lead the Jewish people? This is what Tzaddik says, which is astounding. Who's worthy to be a Kohen Gadol? A Kohen Gadol is somebody who wants to connect people with God. A Kohen Gadol says, I don't care about myself. I'm a conduit to connect people with God. Aaron says, okay, if I have to lose my soul in order that these people sin a little bit less, it's worthwhile to do because I don't want these people to get any worse of a sin than they're already getting. Which Aaron is so concerned about these people not getting sins. So guess what happens? God says, That's why I want him as my Kohen Gadol. I want Aaron. I want somebody who cares so much, who loves the Jewish people so much that he's willing to give up everything in order to try to help them. He's the guy that I want. So he says, don't think that Aaron becomes the Kohen Gadol despite the Chet HaEgel, despite the sin of the golden calf. Quite the opposite. He becomes the Kohen Gadol because of the sin of the golden calf. So now that is, as I said, completely, completely astounding. But maybe we could just go like one or two steps further. What the Kohen Gadol does, he walks inside the Holy of Holies and he brings the Ketores. The Ketores, of course, is incense. We've done this numerous times, but let's revisit this just in order to get completion here. Why do we use the incense? Why do we use the Ketores? The Bnei Yisachar tells us that the sense of smell was the one sense that was not corrupted in the Garden of Eden. When the quote-unquote original sin took place, Eve listened to the words of the serpent that's hearing. She sees the tree is pleasing, it's saying. She touches the tree. She tastes from the fruit. The only sense which is not included in the sin is the sense of smell. So from the one place where there's no sin, the one area that there's no sin, that's how you can rebuild the world. That's what the high priest does. That's what Kohen Gadol does. He goes in from the place where there isn't sin, and that's where he tries to rebuild. However, what does he go in with? He goes in with the Ketores. What is the Ketores made of? Ketores is incense. What is it made of? The Ketores itself is made up of various things, including it's made of the Chilbona, which smells horrific. So what do you do? How do you make perfume? Have you ever made perfume? Well, you go buy it. You should make it. How do you make perfume? Perfume, in order to again, today everything is fake. Everything is, what do you call it? What?
Chemicals.
But real perfume, how do you make it? You'll take something from nature, which is very pungent, something that has a very strong smell, and mask the strong smell with a sweet smell. Which means if you can somehow harness something like even a skunk smell. Skunk smell fills the room, great. But all you have to do is know how to cover it up. You can cover up the bad smell, and that's how it works. Do you understand yet now how the Ketores works? It has a bad smell inside. And what do you do to the bad smell? You cover up the bad smell with something which is good. It's the mixture which does it. How do you get rid of the sin? You get rid of the sin is there. The sin is a bad smell. It's very strong. The Eitz Hara is incredibly strong. The evil inclination grabs control of us. So what do? You take it and you cover it up and you show yourself how to use this Yetzer, how to use this in a positive way, how to make something sweet out of it. Which means Aharon, who sins, he's going to go in holding on to the one sense where there was never sin, and he's going to use in his hand something which knows how to cover up sin, and that's how this is going to be healed. That's the process which is taking place. But there's one more aspect to it. When you go inside the Kodesh HaKadoshim, what's there? You have the Kruvim, which I won't speak about now. And you have the Aron. And inside the Aron, you have two different sets of luchos. You have the broken luchos, and you have the complete luchos. The broken luchos are for Aaron. Broken luchos are a broken heart. The whole luchos is what Moshe eventually brings down. Because Moshe has no more connection with the broken luchos, because that's the only place that Aaron's going to go in. The broken luchos represent the broken heart. Because when Aaron, every time he'll go into the Holy of Holies, and he'll try to bring about forgiveness for the Jewish people, Aaron will know that he sinned. It's very different from somebody like Moshe walking into the Holy of Holies and saying, God, forgive them for what they did. Right? You know, it's very difficult to give Musar. It's very difficult to get up and to give Musar and say, you know, you shouldn't do this, and you shouldn't do this, and you shouldn't do this. And the real Bali Musar, they get up and they say, and they mean it. They really mean it. They say, I'm going to give Musar to myself right now. If any of you want to listen, I'm going to say it out loud. And it's not just the line. They really, really mean it. But if you don't understand this, you never lived there, you have no connection with this, how can you give Musar? If Moshe would have walked into the Holy of Holies as a Kohen Gadol, what would Moshe have said? Looked at God and said, listen, really sorry for what these people did. Every time Aaron went in, he goes in with a broken heart. And he'll say, God, I messed up with the golden calf. I shouldn't have done this, but my heart was in the right place. And now my heart, which was in the right place, is broken. and staring right in front of him is the Aron with the broken luchos, and God says, I accept the broken luchos. I love the broken luchos. And the broken luchos sit inside the Holy of Holies, right next to the whole luchos. And that's really what it's all about, is how can we take the broken heart, how can we take the broken luchos and make it whole again? Aaron did everything that he did because of his love of Am Yisrael. That's why Aaron becomes the Kohen Gadol. If I claim this was decided before the sin of the golden calf, you now understand why it happened. If I claim that it happened after the golden calf, you also understand now why he becomes the Kohen Gadol. Have a good Shabbos.